Superior Partners.
Yeah, that's in the PIA.
Yeah, the last few times I was just saying that I'm not interested in it.
This is from the hearing, right? In detail, right?
I read it.
We're great if it's just informing as long as it's not ready.
We're ready here, sir. For all we've got to do. We'll open up the conference committee on set bill 2-2. Thank the committee members and also the people yesterday that were involved in our group discussion, and we got a lot of information out of that. We have not yet started to work on the next proposed amendments. Everybody was there yesterday probably had the idea that we do need some work and that's the thing. So what we want to do this morning is go over and discuss some of these matters that we talked about, put some of these issues on record. And we'll probably start having legislative council start with the proposed amendments. And sometime next week we'll probably have a bill out, probably Tuesday afternoon, maybe Wednesday morning. Give people an opportunity to look at it, and then we'll schedule another conference committee sometime towards the end of next week. It appears as though we're going to be here for a couple weeks, so we might... a little bit of time.
That's a long response.
Long response. Well, on this bill we had, I've got down actually five different areas here. Service quality, universal service, price cap, price floor, prohibited acts, and the planning and process procedure. We had a pretty thorough discussion yesterday of people's concerns, and we're in the process of answering those and creating language. So we still have a working process here. Does anybody have any questions on service quality when we're talking about all this? What section is that? And it's section 29.
Hey, did you have some some of the issues from yesterday's meeting?
I know there was some discussion on the Section 29 area, and representatives of PUC and the other carriers are involved trying to resolve that. Does anybody have any questions on those? Okay, how about universal service? Which is section 28 of the bill. So would you like to step forth and give your impressions of the bill, please? There was some fairly lengthy discussions about universal service.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joan Smith, and I'm a member of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I have with me today Phil Nygaard, who was also at the meeting yesterday and heads up our telecom department. The issues around universal service are complex, and they started out in this bill with a fairly detailed and prescriptive way to go about setting up a fund. In the working group, it was decided that the detail was beginning to bog everything down and every piece of that detail became debatable. What this version of the bill, A23, tries to do is set out the principles. In general, it allows the state fund and directs the commission to set that fund up within 12 months. And the language starts out on page 8 of the bill in front of you. some of the principles are not debatable. It's to be competitively neutral, non-discriminatory. It's supposed to and must ensure that basic telephone service is available everywhere at a reasonable and affordable rate. There's still some debate, and here's where the conversation began yesterday, over the language that you see at the bottom of page 8, which talks about providing explicit support equal to the difference between the cost and the price. The debate there is whether to have cost and price or cost and a benchmark, and that will be a policy decision that I assume Senator Nelson, this committee makes.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you distinguish for the record the difference between price and benchmark?
Senator Nelson, Representative Hill, I'm going to punt that one to Bill. He can do it more clearly than I can.
Mayor Nelson, Representative Hill. I think the term price is pretty clear what that means. The word benchmark is a generic term. It could mean a variety of things. The FCC, for instance, at one point was talking about a revenue benchmark. Now they seem to be talking about a cost benchmark. This is something that's being discussed in our ongoing universal service docket, and that's where we expect that the final determination will be made. We don't expect, however, that the benchmark we ultimately adopt would be price.
Just so we're clear here, what does that mean? You have said that, that you won't put benchmarks mean price. So is benchmark higher or lower than the price that we charge for basic telephone service here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, our expectation is that the benchmark will be above price.
So given that, then, if a telephone company who is receiving residential service is selling telephone service at the price that the commission has established that you can't sell it for any more than this, but they're only being reimbursed between a benchmark and cost, and there's going to be a gap between the benchmark and the price, who is responsible for paying that difference?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, this is a familiar question, and it gets to the issue of whether a company is entitled to recover the cost of serving each individual customer as opposed to being made whole as a whole. Even though explicit subsidies clearly are something that we're trying to get rid of, I think as a practical matter, there will always be implicit subsidies, just by the nature of it. Our expectation is that these companies will continue to make a very good rate of return and that they will, in fact, recover all of their costs.
So it's been a policy decision as to whether or not we think in this state that the universal service should be there to recover between either benchmark or price and cost, and so that's something that would be set up to us. We could decide that versus punting that to the commission and the commission debate whether or not it establishes a benchmark price or a price. I'm just my cursory understanding of the Federal Telecommunication Act. I think they're pretty explicit when they say that that the needed to remove implicit subsidies, but yet here you're arguing that they will always be there, which seems to be at odds with the Federal Telecommunications Act. And I'm just trying to balance this out as we're making this policy decision on establishing a universal service plan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Charles, I've been here, and if I'm putting words in Phil's mouth, I'm assuming he'll let me know. When he says there will always be some kind of implicit subsidy, I think we're talking there about the nature of the beast. However, our job in setting up a state fund in order to get federal money is to take every bit of implicit subsidy out that we can get our hands on, if you will, and our, I would say, everybody involved in the process out of rate and make them explicit, because that's what the Act demands. The issue is a very obscure one, really, when you think about whether you would tie the basic rate, the rate you pay for dial tone at your house, to the benchmark, or whether you would tie that price to cost and make sure the price covers cost, and where any company is not able to cover its cost, it would be provided the support to do so. Dan, let me back up. If it's just going to float automatically with the benchmark, it's one decision, or whether price covers cost and the difference is made up between that and the benchmark is the other decision. Probably didn't help, did it?
Yeah, sure. Okay, I guess, because my concern in this is, I think in terms of the logic that you note that, you know, we're going to make enough money anyway, so it doesn't really matter if we don't quite, you know, cover the gap. That is a focus in terms of the incumbent selling, incumbent carrier selling telecommunications services. And if we're trying to encourage investment and competitors coming in, and you tell the competitor that, hey, you know, here's, you can come in or you can apply for the Universal Service Fund, you know what, we'll only give you 80% of the difference, you still have to pay it, and so you're still going to have to sell it at a loss. Which competitor is going to show up in town and lose money on residential telephone service, given the fact that they won't be able to, you know, get a full recovery of the cost of delivering the service? That is, unless they lie and they say that their costs are higher, you know, than their actual. I mean, that's sort of the assumption here that, I mean, I'm assuming that you're going to go out and you're going to figure out the cost is cost, and this is how much it costs to deliver service, and you're only going to reimburse between point A and point B. But if someone's out lying, saying it costs more than it really does, and therefore they're going to make money anyway, so it's okay for us not to sort of have this little gap where we, you know, won't promise any recovery for, because they can just eat it up in volume, I guess. I'm just adding the numbers up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, point well taken, and that's why I think that 12-month deadline is a good one, and it's also an opportunity for all the parties to crunch numbers, because the key here is making sure we have enough money in the fund so that every Oregonian can get phone service at a reasonable rate. So first we have to decide what that is. Then the issue would be, what kind of charge does that mean? But I don't think the commission had any intent in supporting any company recovering its legitimate cost. It's kind of a vocabulary thing in a way.
So if I, then I, my conclusion then I have to reach then is, Universal Service Fund is defined as a fund which reimburses from cost to price. And that this little mystery other piece shouldn't be a mystery piece, and that'll work out in how you calculate what cost is. Because, I mean, if you're defining what cost is, you get to define how that number is calculated. If you're defining what price is, then you'll beat it and you'll set it right there. It'll be equitable and non-discriminatory across everyone. So it's okay for us to define the Universal Service Fund as that piece. Because you're defining what cost is and you're setting what the target price.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hill, I'm not sure I understood your point. Would you mind rephrasing it?
Mr. Chair, so our conclusion here that if we really don't need this little mystery piece where it's going to be unreimbursed, because one, that would be in violation of the Federal Act. So for us, our decision here in this conference committee in determining how to establish the language for Universal Service Fund, it would be an appropriate policy decision for us to state that the Universal Service Fund is defined as the reimbursement between cost and price. And that And then because you define what cost is, if you want to adjust the equation, you'll have that ability on the cost factor, but not a benchmark, which would be less than, you know, benchmark allows you to establish 3 points. Amount they can charge, amount at a point higher, that you will only pay the difference between that point and cost. So if we remove benchmark and say price, the slider on the scale is going to be how you define cost.
Is there a response to that, Phil?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, my response is this, if that's the decision of the legislature and the governor, I think that's a reasonable choice. I think the situation is more complex. However, I would note several things. One, the FCC itself is going to apparently choose a benchmark substantially above price, and I don't think that's inconsistent with the federal act either. We don't read the federal act as a strict requirement that all implicit subsidies be removed. It's that they must be clearly identified, and it's a goal to remove them as best we can. We don't read the act as making them explicitly illegal. The other difficult part here is in order to, if the policy decision is made to set the benchmark equal to price, what that is going to do is result in an extremely large universal service surcharge. I think that's another factor that the decision makers need to take into account. If after they've taken all these things into account, their decision is that we still want to set there is one other thing. States under the Federal Act who have a universal service fund are required by the Telecommunications Act to conform to federal law. Most people believe that ultimately, at least, that's going to be determined to be consistent with the FCC's plan. That's one of the reasons why we have not gone out ahead of the FCC. So these are all considerations. If after all is said and done, the decision makers decide that they think the best choice is to set the benchmark equal to price, I agree with Representative Hill. They can do that if that's what they wish.
Really, what you're saying is that regardless of what this bill does, the universal fund, as determined by the Fed, is going to raise or could potentially raise rates. Is that a fair statement?
Sure, Nelson. That's true in two senses. One, there will eventually be a federal universal service charge on everyone's bill, and depending on actions taken by the FCC, they will have a significant impact on the state universal service fund surcharge that shows up on Oregon's bills as well.
On line 13 and 14 of page 8, you talk about the 12 months. Do you have any problem with that? Because it appears to us that the feds keep pushing their date back, and it's very likely that they're not going to come up with a decision in 12 months, or it's a possibility, not likely, it's a possibility. Do you have any
Senator Nelson,
that?
I'm one of the three that cracked the whip. We've discussed this at our legislative meetings, and I believe that we can set up an adequate, maybe not a perfect, fund within 12 months, and I think that's an important thing to do, because if we wait for the FCC, we could be waiting decades to get it straight. Let me just cut to the chase here. U.S. West is very concerned that it will not be compensated for the cost of providing service under the Universal Service Fund. Whatever vocabulary we use, coupled with the rate case and rate redesign, that will not be the case. They will be compensated. Hub and ARF are very concerned that in compensating them, there will be a huge surcharge on the bill, and it won't be fair. I think I can assure you that will not be the case.
That may happen whether this bill goes through or not. Is that
correct? Although theoretically, what might happen is by making the support explicit, you're really not changing the rate because it's already in there, so to speak, in supporting high-cost areas. Hub and ARP also fear that this would mean an automatic rate rebalancing, that is, lowering business but raising residential, because there's so much subsidy in business rates. I believe that the Commission and the parties working together can do that task fairly outside of the universal service exercise. And finally, the competitors feel that by being reimbursed for costs not covered in price, that the incumbent companies will be making an unfair profit. And I believe that we have enough smart people around our table that will allow people to know that that will not be the case.
But this universal service line is going to be an issue regardless of this bill, is that correct?
Yes.
This bill is basically giving you a generic approach to that and trying to get to the language that somehow you're going to have to get to anyway.
The key to the bill, Mr. Chair, will be to make all parties understand that this has to be fair. And nobody gets more than they should, and nobody gets less than they should.
Senator Byler, you have a question?
Thank you. Just to make sure I understand. So the real drivers, the variables on this is what the price the carrier is allowed to charge for basic services. That's the key determinant, is the price. To set that, I assume we're probably talking at about where we're at now, at least for this time, for 5 years after this is put in. And then the piece that comes off of that is how you define cost, whether the cost is on each individual account line charge or whether it's an averaged cost. So that's going to determine how much, you know, if the basic rate is $12 a month and you're out in way out in the rural remote area and it costs $50, you're talking about how much difference there is from 12 to 50. And how much of that the feds choose to pick up, and then whatever the balance is what the state will pick up. If you go on an individual, the other side of that one would be, and it's not clear to me here, that if you went on some kind of average cost, it would change that number a little bit. So is that the determinant?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byler, you just summed up the whole thing and the choice, yes.
Shall we do have a little bit of time to stay here. We knew we have an issue here, and I know that you folks are working on it, and part of the language. I just want to make sure this is part of the public record so that we have some idea what's going on.
Sure, there are other issues.
I just want to be clear, in terms of the policy choice on that issue in this language, there's nothing in here that specifies what that that the legislature would make a choice. It really says the PUC will define that over the next 12 months. Am I missing? Is that correct?
Correct. That's what I see that.
Mr. Chair, there are two other issues under universal service, and one is how you grant support monies to competitors without being intrusive in a regulatory way, because they don't file the cost of their service with us, and that's something that needs to be worked out. And finally, the issue of wireless carriers is the same as it was in 622A and Gross on page 9, starting at section 4, allows opting in for wireless carriers who wish to be eligible for communications carriers.
Representative Deckard, you
have a... Mr. Chair, Senator Byler asked the heart of my question. So we will revisit this once they bring back language for us to discuss again.
Yeah, Representative.
Well, I guess my question is in terms of what are we going to bring back? I mean, we've gone through this, and this is the first time this is public, but we've been through this, there's been about 6 or 7 different iterations on this. It just comes down to that question in terms of what's it going to be? And our choices are, we use the term benchmark, and then we can have a fight over how we define benchmark and what to do. That's sort of, we can throw that out and make everybody feel good about it, and then we can have a debate over defining the term benchmark and try to define benchmark to include a whole bunch of things so that at the end it's the same that we already talked about. But.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, point well taken again, and Representative Deckard, what we can provide is the language you see and the language, the other alternative language, and what their impacts will be under each option, so it will be more clear than we've probably been for you this morning.
Any comments?
We're going to hire Senator Beyer to do this.
You need to get to go with the unknown, huh?
Okay, well, let's continue on here. Price caps, price scores, there were a couple issues on that, the bundling of services, and I feel that that's workable. We can come to some sort of agreeable language on that. Any questions on price floor, price caps? Prohibitive acts. We did have some question on that.
That's a great title.
Prohibitive acts.
We weren't dealing with special legislation.
We're getting into social issues here. I guess with this, I had some comment after the meeting about whether or not we should go back to basically a universal service type version of the prohibited acts, and that's something we're going to have to talk about. I know Representative Deckard has been working on this issue, and there seemed to be a lot of consternation between all the players about that particular issue, and so that's something we're going to have to work out. And I've actually haven't asked him, but now I'm asking Representative Deckard to talk to most people and make some concerns. We'd agreed to take out at least one portion of it, but I think there's still some work to be done on it, and so I'm leaving that up to Representative Deckard.
Mr. Chair, just one point on that. Section K, I think there was at least some agreement from a lot of the parties that Section K would be removed.
What page is that on? It's on
Section 27.
Page
37, I mean. Section 37?
Page 28.
Page 28. Section 37, page 28. Line 27 to 29.
Would be removed from the bill.
All right. We have the other issue is the planning and the process. While you folks are still here, the planning and process is not a regulatory issue. We do have some other issues here on Section 9A and Section B, 9A and B, on page... page 6. It'll be Section 25. Cub and ARP made a request that this issue be brought in. We know that there's some problems with that, and so what the chairs are proposing is that this is the 5-year requirement, that we actually leave in 9A, allowing the commission to review, we're reviewing caps and floors on other services, is that correct? Sadly, while the price caps and price floors established under this section, and our proposal to leave 9 a.m. with the proviso that the commission would make a study then report to the legislature, and that we would delete Section 9B. And part of our reasoning for this is that this provision was put in based upon a representation made relating to the rate case that's now existing. We have thrown the rate case out of this bill, except for some references to it as setting a maximum rate. And we felt that we put this in with the idea that it had some relation to the rate case, and so if we felt in being fair to all the parties that we would take that out, allowing the commission the power to go in and actually reset the rates, but leaving in a proviso so that you would review those rates and bring it back to the legislature. So that's some sort of compromise agreement that we've come to. Is there any comment on that?
Mr. Chair, at some point could we hear from AARP and Cobb in terms of that proposal? I liked the initial proposal. I thought it provided some justification for us to explain that there would be a review at some point, and it could be a date certain 5 years down the line, just in the sense of keeping rates lower for residential users if possible. So it would give 5 years of non-tampering by the PUC, and then at that point they could.
Yeah. And that's actually, we would put that in there. I think Tub and ARP came in yesterday and said that they would like more periodic reviews even after 5 years, so there would be one. I don't have any problem with that in maybe 5 or 10 years. I guess the problem we have is that 9B would give the commission more power that actually does not exist at this time, and so that's going to cause a problem with the entire bill. So we're trying to come to some sort of reasonable agreement between the parties. So that's where we're at, and no one's asked. I think that's the direction we have to go. I don't think there's much discussion about that. So any comment on that from the PUC?
Sounds good. Let's see. We've taken care of that.
There was an issue in the House on private schools. We've taken the private schools out of the bills. And what we've done is we will put language into the bill indicating that they will compete just as any other private interest under the Public Access Fund. Is that
Community of Interest?
Community of Interest. And so that probably doesn't have anything to do with the PUC, that was an issue I know in the House. There was a constitutional problem, a true constitutional problem. Another small issue is on pages 20 and 21 of the Act, we allow Oregon Health Science University the opportunity to opt in, but we have some language we need to clarify on that because OSHU is actually a public corporation, and we need to put their name in. Is there any problem with that?
What would that be, Mr. Chair?
That's on pages 20 and 21. The funding formula. Okay, we also had a section we left out there on disabilities, some funding available for disabilities, for people with disabilities. We intended to get that back into there. And then we had an issue on the PUDs, public utilities, people's utilities. We're trying to work that process out. The issue there is there's some question whether or not the PUDs now have authority to get into telecommunications business under their charter. And there is an issue over the condemnation rights involved in that, and so we're trying to work that issue out. We've got parties involved with that coming up with language. Just want that part of the public record so you know that we're working on that.
Okay. Is that the section we're doing with PUPs where we were talking about making clear that that would include all public corporations?
No, I think that's in page 32 of the bill. Section 39, and it's the way the language we have under this bill is when exercising the power, a PUD may exercise the power of eminent domain under Section 5. That seems to be the issue of controversy. I think the definition of those who would be allowed would be in the first portion of that section. Yeah, and we should have a packet on our desk that shows the difference of the two languages. Anybody have this thing? The fourth page down. We don't have to make a decision on this, but I just wanted to make sure that everybody's aware that that issue is out there. Senator Byer had a county notification amendment that he wishes to propose, and that's the first page of the packet. Senator Byer, do you want to make any statement on that?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The intent there really comes from the counties, Commissioner Cindy Wildreyer, who is a Lane County commissioner, but I believe the chair of the Association of Oregon Counties telecommunications thing. Policy group, and they had just requested the counties that to assist them in trying to coordinate activities where new services are coming through, that they would be notified by state agencies if permit application had been filed. The example that they used is Klamath in Lane County and Coos Curry, Douglas in Lane County had recently been involved in projects where, through their initiation, they were able to help the utilities that were proposing for projects and to the fiber optic lines you're talking about. They were able to help them coordinate easements through the area and franchise agreements with the various cities as well as the state agencies. In return for that, the public agencies together had gotten better service out of it in terms of their, I think the one that stands out is Transfiber Corporation is putting the line from Canada to San Diego, and as they went through Lane and Klamath counties, they agreed to give them, I think it's six fibers out of that. Process to do that in terms for the, all of the cities that they're going through and the others waive their franchise fees. So it, all they wanted to have was the ability to know when something was happening so that they could collectively talk about it with the utilities and other providers and see if they could just make it work better.
This is a notification.
The intent is just notification.
I know the Department of Transportation had expressed interest in this and perhaps some concern if you would get together with Mark Ford and
my gentleman, I don't know if he's still here, was here a minute ago.
Yeah, he's
back there. I believe, as he can shake his head no if I say it wrong, there was a concern on state agencies that it not be a permitting function. Some concern we're trying to force that, but if it was just notification, that wasn't as much of a concern. Yeah. I think this does.
I'll say, if you have concerns about that, speak to Senator Beyer, and I just want to make sure that we're open and
I don't want to make life difficult, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And we had another issue that we need to talk about was the funding formula in the planning and process stage. There was some, I think, misunderstanding yesterday, and Senator Representative Bell talked about this, how we're going to implement this bill with the Department of Economic Development. And so we just have a little discussion about that. I think in the bill we have, what is the language of the bill that indicates that it's looking for the percentage and also then the amount of page 17, line 15. We had 5% of the funds available in the carrier telecommunication infrastructure account in 2000 and 2001, and I think we need to clarify, is that each year or is that the total biennium? Because it does make a difference of about $250,000 each year. That's an issue that needs to discuss. And also then there's an additional, on lines 29 and 30, there's an additional $250,000 going to the Economic Development Department. As I recall, Representative Bell, you had some issues about that or some concerns about the amount of money that would be going into the planning process.
No, I understand that's out of the percentage.
It's your idea that that first 150,000 is out of the percentage, which refers to lines 15 and 16. Now we have to make talk about this issue. Is that we're talking about $250,000 each year or $500,000 each year? It's a percentage of 5% of the funds available, and we're estimated maybe $10 million in the first year. So that'd be $500,000 in the first year. Any comments on that?
You're getting a reaction shock from the OECD people.
Doris, would you like to come up and talk about this?
Senator Nelson, members of the committee, my name is Doris Penwell from Economic Development Department. Our interest at the department was not in having a large amount of money, but to be able to have a little bit of funding so that we could move into the process quickly and start forming a few people to work with the carriers, the communities, et cetera, to get the advisory board going and work with the commission on the work to be done. And I think the bill was written so that the $250,000, could come up front once, just to get it moving. And then that would be, and we probably couldn't get that money immediately, so we would probably have to expend our own funds first if we want to move quickly, and then be able to be reimbursed by that money somehow. And then the 5% and the 2.3% was calculated by the staff based on a little bit of a fiscal impact we did to see, okay, how much would it take in terms of staffing and expertise? And this is not full-time FTE. It's a consultant, and maybe a couple of staff that can work with communities in the various areas of the state, and maybe one clerical, something like that. So that was what was calculated from the monies that were put in the fund by the carrier. And I guess we didn't talk about whether year or biennially, and I think the administrator could talk about what she had in mind here.
Do you have any particular thought, Ryan?
I have a question.
Yes.
Or a comment. Doris, I see OEDD's role as just critical in this bill, and I haven't had the opportunity to discuss it with you, but I think it's really critical that we know that the planning infrastructure is there so that the projects that are endeavored upon, we know, are going to serve the long-term economic interest. And if OEDD doesn't have, I just think at some point, and maybe you can do this with myself, is just make the case that we have the planning, or we have the plans and the funds available to have the planning necessary to really ensure that these projects are ones that are going to serve Oregonians in 20, 30 years down the line.
Senator Nelson and Representative Deckard, I guess we agree with you. We weren't involved in the development of the bill from the very beginning, but it seems to me that somebody that doesn't have an axe to grind needs to be somewhere in place to help coordinate among various parties. So we're not thinking about needing a huge staff, but we do need to have some expertise. The department doesn't necessarily have any of that now. We have a lot of understanding about how to finance things and how to work with communities and work with groups, but we need some expertise. So that's what we need to do, and we are to the point that we can't add a lot more workload to the department and still get done the basic services of our commission and the legislature has already given us to do.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you feel under the constructs of this bill, the current constructs and funding available, that you will be able to bring on additional support that is technically knowledgeable in this area to ensure that we will get what we're asking for here, which is real analytical view of this is going to, these are new projects that are really well positioned within the current infrastructure that we have in the state.
Representative Deckard, I think we can, if we resolve this issue about how much funding is actually available that can be transferred from the carrier's account, to be sure we can pay for the staffing. We do believe it's possible.
Senator Bauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to express some reservation about the process and sort of take up on Representative Montgomery's old lines in terms of adding staff. There's an additional workload that would be required here, and I respect that and really do it. And I think the department has exceptional staff in terms of financing and project management. The technical piece that is really important to this, as Representative Deckard pointed out, I think is a knowledge that it's not there, nor should it be there, if you haven't been involved in that business. I know you have so much effort, but I would be concerned that we not try to build a technical expertise within OEDD, that if that's needed, particularly start, that we do that with buying some consulting help, either from other elements of state government or maybe a loaned executive. I don't care, one of the information areas, or DAS or PUC, or buy it outside, but that we don't try to recreate and build that within the Economic Development Department.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I think that's exactly the way the department has felt that this should operate. This whole process will not go until the end of time. I think there is a time period here, although it will go more than 4 years if somebody else can improve or something. But I think you're right. We don't have the technical expertise, particularly now. You would have to have consultants, loan executives, and then you need a little bit of staff to just actually, you know, gain experience and work with the communities, because you can't do everything at once.
Mm-hmm. I guess
thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just to sort of add here on this, as I've always thought about this, we have talked about the number being about $500,000 total available. That doesn't mean that we'll spend $500,000. That's because they spend all the money, that's just money that's not available for projects.
That's right. Year.
That was a year. What we had originally discussed in terms of, but I think that's going to be dependent upon in terms of the communities and the projects that are in place, because in terms of there's no action, you shouldn't be spending the money. It's sort of even though it says an emergency clause, let's keep in mind in terms of that carriers can't opt in. One carrier said that they will opt in. It can't opt in under the bill until September timeframe, and the money's not available until January. There's no need to go and start racing out do all this work, because we need to wait and make sure that there's money there before we go off and spend it. And that, I think, in terms of we can ramp this up, because I think that the communities out there are going to come forward. And I think the vision here is that we have the dollars necessary to go hire the expertise, to evaluate the programs, to make sure that if we go do this, that we sort of have the certified smart person come and say, yeah, this will work, but have you thought about this, this, and this, and maybe you might be able to tie multiple of these communities together so that you're doing something long-term, rather than looking at everything basically down at, this is what my community wants, therefore I want it, you know. But let's step back a little bit and make sure that we've got sort of a work plan and maybe a roadmap to rural infrastructure, telecommunications development. You know, spend a little bit of money on that, but do it in such a way that it makes sense, but making sure that we have the dollars available to go do it, because this is not cheap, and we're talking about investing huge sums of money over the next, you know, 4 years as a result of this. So
I guess the question I have is, the way this agrees is there'd be $1 million for planning, and it seems like that's pretty excessive. The $1 million is far more than we need for what we're asking.
Mr. Chair, it's hard for us to estimate whether it's $1 million or $750,000 until we actually do a little bit of assessment. I guess I would say it's important that you do a little bit of upfront work, and maybe you write it in such a way that it's up to an amount. You know, usually in most of these statutory things, you have a maximum limit, and you seldom reach it, but at least you have a little flexibility. So that you can actually not bind yourself too much.
I guess my concern is the fact that what is the purpose of this plan? We're not doing the state's plan with this. This is a rural, basically designed for a rural infrastructure building. The state wants to get involved in it, and they should have their own resources to do that.
I understand.
What I'm saying is that we have X amount of dollars out there. Are we going to be losing that? Are we going to be going for infrastructure?
Sure. I would agree. This is for review of community plans. This is not to go out and develop the, you know, enterprise network. They've got the money for that. They've got the expertise to go do that. There may be a little bit where this will come in and see where it all meshes up, and maybe there's some, you know, congruency, and we can all, you know, join hands and walk together. But I think the purpose of this is to review the community plans and make sure we have the expertise and the resources available to the commission. We're expecting the commission to make a decision saying yes, go forward, make these things, and the members of the OED, the Economic Development Commission, aren't certified smart in this, and so they need to be able to have the assurance that yes, this is a good investment, and this will, as Representative Dickens says, return some investments over time to the state. And so I think in terms of that's what we need to do, and
that's our presentation, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. This is a review of the plan. Are we also going to be reviewing the $50 million going to the education part? Is that included in this to make sure that's spent properly too? Or how are we going to review that? Who is going to review that?
That's going to the Department of Education. It's under their control at that point.
Thank you. You just clarified my question.
Terry Evanson, do you, would you like to come up and just stay there for a second? Would you please, Mark? Terry has some rather strong opinions on this. I think it shouldn't be right.
Senator Nelson, committee members, having heard the discussion today between the parties, I feel more comfortable having talked with Doris Penwell and getting general agreement on what we propose. I feel a lot more comfortable. I'm just curious what the standards are for the certified smart person when we advertise.
Yes, yes, yes. Senator Courtney about that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we can both hear. Have we come to any of this? I mean, we have this discussion about the monies, and this. Do you have any concerns about the fact of if we spend $1 million, that might take $500,000 out of your rural infrastructure ideas?
Absolutely. We're concerned with anything that takes the money out of the infrastructure pot. And we understood the discussion, maybe incorrectly from the beginning, that those appropriations were for the biennium, 5% for the biennium, not for the per annum.
Senator Nelson, I think that when we did the fiscal impact, we were talking about a biennial period, but we were thinking about whatever was in the account. We were estimating what might be in an account, and we did it by the biennium.
By the biennium?
So, and frankly, if we get in a bind about the amount of money, like you say, we could probably talk about loan executives or whatever. We've done this in the past. We just think that the department really doesn't have resources at the current time to do a really fine job and be sure it's a lot of personnel.
Yes. The other comment I would make is that we would expect the local communities to contribute to the process, too. This is not, as we've been involved and engaged with Burns and Grand and several other communities, communities have always put up significant dollars. And they're going to have to if this is going to be involved.
Well, while you're both up here on sections 31 and 31A, we hear just have some problems, and the language that's in this, we have this language in this packet, the fourth page of our packet. And this was a discussion how to set up the plan with the concern of Representative Hill, and I think some other members of the committee, to have some sort of planning process. Also, the concern of the governor's office, and I know that Mr. Evanson had some concern. So what I did is had them construct some language, and I think Doris has had an opportunity to look at it. They've talked about it. This just gets down to the nitty-gritty of how this plan actually is going to work and the language that's proposed, and if you could just make some comment on that.
Senator Nelson, members of the committee, I have looked at the language that has been proposed here. I think it's good language because typically it operates the way the department is used to operating. You shall conduct an assessment, but obviously it's in concert with the carriers, the prospective carriers, the communities and regions. It talks about others interested in improving. Others could be anybody, and that's fine, but if you want to include wording that has to do with communities and regions in the private sector, that's fine.
So you're fairly comfortable with this one?
Yeah, this direction is not too different from here. It's just a little more explicit in terms of you're doing this in concert with others.
Okay. Any comment?
Only that we feel comfortable with this. It's not as exclusive as the other language was, and it doesn't say a large bureaucracy being formed to carry it out. It engages initially the advisory committee, which under the language that was in the bill, intentionally or not, made it impossible for the advisory committee to engage in the process until after plans were developed. And to us, this was the critical element. They took it away from the local. They made it top-down planning versus bottom-up planning.
All right. Any questions or comments on any of this? Let's see. The only other
question, I think. Thank you very much. Appreciate you. The only other question I think that I have down here that we haven't talked about and that I think was brought up yesterday was the question of territory funding. About a substantial amount of the money that a private carrier would put in would be going towards the territory that they serve. The issue being is that is it fair for a company to put this money up and then have another competitor come in and use their money to bring them competition? So I think we have an issue to discuss there. If there's any comment on that? Okay, the language is on that, on the first page of that, under Section 31 and 31A. So that's part of the record. Any other questions or comments?
I have two things. It seems like everybody else would be happy if they got their amendment. So if we have 74 more amendments, maybe we'll get a bill done. I have the 19 amendments that were put out before we had the revision, the 23 amendments. Maybe I could ask, there are four or five minor changes, but I think they may be more major than I'm implying. Maybe if I could ask the person who's interested in those to get with staff and discuss them with them, I don't need to bring it up now. I also received a phone call today from a little phone company down in Monroe, Oregon. These people are very unhappy. They've been doing this for I don't know how many years. I don't know this company from Adam. They've never had a complaint on earth, and now they're going to do a whole bunch of paperwork that we've had to deal. So there's more things that are coming up from the smaller outfit that haven't been amply represented in this bill that I would like to see addressed. This gentleman, John Dillard, who I don't know that well, is sending back and stuff to get. I'd like to pass it to the staff and see if we can address the small company concern, not the big company. Thank you.
Montgomery, I believe that Gary Bauer represents the independent telephone company.
I understand that. I understand that, Mr. Chairman, but Gary Bauer hasn't talked to this guy yet.
Sure, what's wrong with you? Any further questions or comments? Thank you, gentlemen. We'll close this public hearing and have so many amendments, and the idea that we'll convene another conference committee sometime next week. Thank you very much.